Hi, I'm Steve Nyemba, and the 1 minute description of what we did is basically we developed a system for auditing EMRs using machine learning techniques, and it's extensible. Well, I've got 20 more minutes, so so it's a joint collaboration between basically the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign, Northwestern University, and Vanderbilt University. So it comes as we know that auditing has been recommended by legislation and most of the people in the healthcare community, usually out of as a result of the debate from access control. And Jason King, is it, made a very good point about logs and what comes out of it. So our goal is to basically design a system that supports auditing using machine learning techniques. And because we believe that such a system could provide actual insight on the workings of the organization, provided things are logged properly, and it would also compensate for domain experts' shortcomings, and also be an extensible platform for new auditing techniques. This is something that current auditing systems don't necessarily always provide. So requirements, the abstract requirements are the ones that will be refined throughout the life cycle of development. So always keep in mind the stakeholders and their interfaces. Make sure that they understand what the machine learning algorithm is delivering to them. Also understanding the demands imposed by auditing as a process. Like, for example, how do you integrate the various computation engines, and how do you make data access widely available to any algorithm that requires data? And also, it's important to recognize risk, because most healthcare organizations have a broad range of systems, and they don't necessarily always talk to one another. So we have to find a way to leverage these systems. And like the director of the lab says, without the disruption. And like I said before, the results of machine learning need to be understood by the stakeholders, because not everybody can interpret what a standard deviation is. When so we recognize that there are two classes of auditing modules. The ones that can run quickly, they're usually simple and not taxing on in terms of resources, and the big data models, because when we try to run auditing on a healthcare organization, the volume of data in of itself could be a problem. So sometimes we have to use special techniques to be able to process the data. And those kinds of auditing models will design accordingly. And also, it's possible for an auditing model to start out simple, but end up being taxing on the system and fall into the category of big data. And so our design needs to be able to accommodate that. So I decided to select three models we developed in the lab that are representative of the two categories that I presented. There's the community anomaly detection system we call CADS. It basically creates communities based on a similarity measure, and it assigns anomaly scores to every user within a community of a size that is specified. Usually you want your community sizes to be the sizes of the care teams. There's the SNAD, model. It kind of does the same, but the community is based on all the users that that accessed a particular medical record. And the last one is, it's a policy learning model that assigns confidence scores and support scores to all the interactions within a network. And what it does is basically it can also abstract the networks, for example, of individuals. Then it can create a network of job titles, how different job titles interact, and then of departments too. So this clearly falls, it's one of our big data models. So we developed a prototype that we called Emote. The name was coined by Dr. Carl Gunter of the University of Illinois. And so what you see here are two views that live in our different stakeholders' environments. I chose the mobile device because it's probably what a patient is going to have. And here we have, on the other side, we have an officer's view of CADs, of the anomalous users within a department. And so the bigger the bubble, the more anomalous a user is. And so this is just one of some of the views that Emote is capable of generating given an auditing model. It will generate those. So, and some of these requirements are a result of us having to tinker around with Emote. And so we decided to kind of like share with the community what we've learned. And that's how we got some of these requirements that we think are the most relevant or the most relevant. So it's not an exhaustive list. First of all, every auditing model has to have access to data because there is, by auditing model, the understanding is that they're supported by machine learning. So the access to data is critical to machine learning. Also, the ability to integrate a computation engine is as critical. The third point is a consequence of a little bit of the first, in that models have parameters, data sources have attributes, and the semantics don't necessarily match. And so we need to be able to have some type of semantic mapping in order for a model to be able to be executed against an arbitrary data source. Also, we need to find ways to make the results understandable by the stakeholders and how to present them. And so the final part is I will discuss a design I came up with for big data models, a few scalability techniques, and how I integrated it into the overall Emote architecture. The short version of this is we implemented a template design pattern in order to abstract the data sources. What we did is we inventoried all vendor specific data stores in the organizations. We created a template and we created a handler for the template so that vendor specific objects would be generated. This is just a Java example. And so from that, we're able to generate different access to different data stores by different vendors and condition and format them into JSON. The JavaScript object notation was the choice we made because it's lightweight, portable, and platform independent. And so one of the decisions was all things data within the architecture will be in JSON format. So message passing, the custom protocols we wrote for communication between the components are essentially all in JSON. the way we implemented the computation engine depended on two things. So based on the platform of choice, if the platform supports an interface, there's not much to be done. And if it has support for JSON, there's still not a whole lot to be done. However, this assumes the worst case scenario where the computation engine does not have an interface nor JSON support for the developing platform. And so what we recommend is implementing a pipe and filter. A pipe and filter is essentially an architectural style that consists in wrapping your computation engine and allowing it to run within a process space and piping back the results. So if there's no support for JSON, once the results are piped back to the calling code, it's important that there be a parser to condition the data in JSON format. And usually, your machine learning models will return matrices, vectors, or scalars. And so this is essentially the elements we use to be able to develop the integration of computation engines. When it comes to the semantic mapping, how we developed an auditing framework was we enabled it to be able to generate a specification of its input parameters. The screen you see is really generated by the application we wrote so that the people writing the machine learning algorithms are not necessarily hardcore programmers and may not necessarily be able to do this. So having the parameters of a model, we're able to generate a user interface and the input forms, the appropriate input forms. And so that's how we're able to determine for any arbitrary data set what the mapping parameters are, and we can run an a query against the arbitrary data source. So the people writing the model don't have to know exactly what data source they're writing the model against, so we're just making it transparent to them. And again, once again, all things data here are in JSON format. So the presentation too, to the stakeholders was important. We decided that there needs to be at least one graphical view, in that we never know what the stakeholder is sensitive to. So we provide a simplistic graphical view that summarizes the output of the machine learning model. And we also forced a certain level of documentation. It's true that it doesn't show here, but it's well integrated in that if there is no documentation, it's like a model with no parameters, there's nothing to be done. Because we want to make sure that it is relevant for the intended audience. In addition to that, because we recognize that machine learning models are not always complete and should be able to generate data for further analysis. And so that's why we made sure that there's a component for that. And again, all things here are JSON. So the reason for JSON was really because it allowed us to be able to take data from the underlying machine learning code all the way through the various layers of the application and do whatever we choose to do with it. So one of the most challenging parts was the big data auditing models, because the volume of data will sometimes make a model seem impractical. And so it requires us to apply scaling techniques. We did some clustering, parallel processing, and multi-core programming. The reason is simple, and I always have a simple analogy, is when we needed a faster mode of locomotion, we didn't develop a mechanical cheetah. The wheel was used. And so that's essentially what some of the techniques around deconstructing models consisted in doing, finding the right techniques to be able to yield the same results. And because the volume of data is overwhelming, we decided to integrate a monitoring system in that when computation is deconstructed, we're able to monitor every step of the way if the various little smaller units have successfully completed. And in case of failure, we can recover and retry from a particular point instead of starting all over again. And that's kind of the third point, the life cycle that we defined. And the life cycle is actually inspired from Bertrand Meyer, who is, yeah, so he is the one who kind of recommended a failure must be succeeded by at least a retry. And we needed to have the state space to be able to retry. And so that's why the intermediate results serve as post conditions for what happened, the execution that followed. And so I kind of already explained what the graphic is, but it's basically essentially generating the intermediate results, inspecting the intermediate results, and if there's no failure, continue to the next module, to the next smaller unit. You can do it in parallel or in series, it doesn't really matter. And be able to retry as needed. So one of the models we executed was the interactive network policy learning. It, just as a reminder, it assigns confidence scores and support scores to every interaction within the organization. And so we just took a week's worth of data, and we had about, we were able to identify 79 unique users, 635, this is Vanderbilt University Hospital, 635 departments for about 18,000 patients. And so we had to create the user-patient matrix, the user-user matrix, from that derive their job titles and their department affiliations. And so we had a bunch of matrices in memory where we were computing confidence scores and support scores. And it really looks bad here. However, the presentation of data is important because if I were to give any one of you one of these giant matrices, I'm sure you would send me back home. And so what we ended up doing was building a dashboard, a searchable dashboard, where, as you can see to the very left, it's basically the top ranking scores in terms of confidence. Underneath are the distributions, and we actually, I forgot to mention this. So the way we condition data when it comes out of a machine learning module is we enrich the data with metadata, because sometimes for a domain expert to be able to make sense of data, they need to have a little bit of a broader view. So saying that there's a 4% chance for a particular department to interact with another may not be necessarily telling. They need to know, for example, how many users are in the department, what kind of traffic is in the department, the prevalence of the specialty of the department, things like that, to be able to know whether an interaction is legitimate or not, or if it's a rare case, but it's legitimate. So we enriched it, put it in a dashboard, and made it available. It really looks bad. So we identified three stakeholders. We showed the patient running SNADS on their mobile device. We showed how an officer can have an entire broader view of the organization. Now, for the analysts, which was our third stakeholder, normally they get to see everything because they're the ones who get to extend the platform and build the auditing tools for different individuals. And so what we did was we implemented simple classes that really, because we recognize that in the analyst stakeholders, you have the hardcore developers and you have just the simple machine learning people who are not necessarily developers. And so one of the tasks to develop a model consisted simply in annotating a class. And from there, a lot of things would be generated and integrated. And so we also made access to various rendering engines so that rendering is not a chore. And we developed a lightweight development kit for our users. So the conclusion, actually, the lessons I learned from this was really how things are logged determines the results of an auditing model. And we found sometimes logs are difficult to understand, they don't necessarily account for everything, and it limits what we can do with the logs. And also there's at times processing the data, whether it be from files or if the semantics are not well understood, creates losses which can affect in turn the output of a machine learning model. In terms of the features, some of the limitations that we have is, for example, we haven't finished it, but we need to implement data source aggregation, as in being able to run a query across n data sources. Right now, it's just you select the data source and it runs against it. We want to be able to do that across all the data sources at once. And also, we need to finish model chaining, in that the output of a model can directly feed into as input to another model. And so what we just did with our prototype was just simplify the development and interpretation of and the presentation of machine learning data. And it's extensible. I'm available for questions.
Hi, my name is Chen from Dartmouth. I'm interested in this access log machine learning algorithm because it's actually a very hard topic for elastic or scalable machine learning. It's kind of a hard topic in this industry as well. So the first question would be, since you design your big data processing engine, so what's your design goal for per hour processing, like gigabytes, terabytes, or something?
So, sorry. We have, the data we processed for that week was in the order of gigabytes. But okay. The data we have available is in the order of terabytes.
Okay.
And we really used everything in the book for it. We've got, and I didn't mention it here, but we've got, we used a bunch of MapReduce engines, and we even got our department to invest in, I don't know if I should say this here, but in an Atiza box, which is pretty cool. And it I mean, we really threw the book at it.
Okay.
In terms of big data.
Thank you. The second question would be, since you are processing a large number of data, so my question is, your big data is a streaming based or it's a batch based?
So we had a little bit of both. This model is batch based. And so one thing you have is, in the life cycle we developed, it generates intermediate results that we can then aggregate. And so that's really where the batch-based comes from. So we have a listener that'll sit there, inspect the intermediate results, aggregate them, feed them to the next next smaller unit, and so on and so forth.
Okay. Because you're talking about this kind of quick failure on like replace kind of theme in pipeline, so it looks pretty much like streaming-based. So, and thank you for answering my question. So.
Oh, actually, the integration of the computation engine, it'll stream it in.
Because I also work on access log processing. Right now, we process 4.5 terabytes per hour. Thank you.
That's impressive.